was 3 months late on the mortgage, and I only delivered 20% of the clothes, and I was about to be bankrupt and homeless, lose my mother's house, and also lose my business because I didn't have any financial intelligence. And it wasn't that I spent money on lavish things. So as much as mom helped me, and as great as she is, my lack of financial intelligence, I was about to lose everything that she ever worked for. Our school system is antiquated. It is teaching our children right now how to go to shop. It teaches us how to be good employees. If you don't teach them financial intelligence in any way and how money works, the colleges are lined up to give them and issue them $600,000 to $700,000 worth of student debt that they will not pay off until they're into their 50s. I'm gonna go and get this $500,000 to $600,000 education that I don't even know if I need.
What is up, young and profiters? You're listening to Yap, Young and Profiting Podcast, where we interview the brightest minds in the world and unpack their wisdom into actionable advice that you can use in your daily life. I'm your host, Hala Taha. Thanks for tuning in and get ready to listen, learn, and profit. Damon, welcome to Young and Profiting Podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I'm very excited. Yeah, fam, it is a special day today on the podcast, and that's because today we have Damon John on the show. He's one of the world's most respected entrepreneurs and somebody I have personally looked up to my entire adult life. Damon John is an investor, he's an entrepreneur, and a philanthropist. He's the CEO and founder of FUBU, a multi-billion dollar global lifestyle brand created to represent overlooked communities. In addition, Damon is one of the original sharks on ABC's four-time Emmy Award-winning TV show Shark Tank, which some of you may know is my all-time favorite TV show. And in fact, Shark Tank was the only TV show I allowed myself to watch for 3 years when I was growing this podcast and my company Yap Media as a side hustle. Damon is also a New York Times bestselling author, and he recently released his first book for children, Little Damon Learns to Earn, earlier in March. In today's episode, Damon and I will cover his rags-to-riches story. We'll gain insight as to why he created FUBU, and we'll hear his lessons learned as a seasoned investor on Shark Tank. We'll also break down how to instill financial and entrepreneurial literacy in our younger generations, and we'll hear how Damon thinks we can instill hope in our youth. So, Damon, I'd love to start off with your incredible come-up story. You grew up in Hollis, Queens, in New York City, and around 10, 12 years old, your parents separated, and your mother ended up working multiple jobs to put food on the table. From my research, I found out that you had an early entrepreneurial itch, even as a kid and teen. You sold everything from pencil to reconditioned cars. So take us back to memory lane. What were you like as a younger kid, and what were your first experiences in entrepreneurship and business?
Well, I think you covered it. You know, as a young kid, I was an only child. My parents, and when they were together, I mean, life happened. They got divorced. I would never see my father or hear from him again after 10 years old. They were hardworking individuals. They worked day jobs, and then they come home and they would work on trying to build little things around the house for the house itself to build it. They would, my mother would, you know, have flea markets on the weekends and various other things. So I'm very hardworking people, but as an only child, I wanted to create a community of friends. I had no way to play with. I think that's what entrepreneurs do, right? I always wanted to find ways to solve other people's problems or bring them joy so I could play with them, because everybody had brothers and sisters, right? So end of the day, I'm like, hey, you want to come over to my house to play? No, I'll go with my brother and sister. Well, I got Tonka trucks. I don't like Tonka trucks. I'll make you a grilled cheese sandwich. I don't like grilled cheese sandwich. I got a cat. You want to play with my cat? I think that's also what entrepreneurs do. They go, I got a product and I got something that I really love. I just think that I made just a little bit of tweaks to something that already exists, and I want to make it better. I want to share it with the rest of the world. Do you want to share it with me? And that's what happened. But I also had to be creative about how was I going to help mom pay the bills, because dad wasn't there. And I knew my mother worked really hard, and I didn't have anybody else to, I didn't have other siblings. And I said, I got to be the man of the house. So I found ways to make money.
I love that. I definitely want to get into all your different stories about how you used to sell as a child. We can talk about that later when we talk about a Little Damon and your new book, Little Damon Learns to Earn. But let's talk about FUBU first. So you have this global lifestyle brand that you created in your younger years. It stands for us, by us. How did you first get the idea to launch FUBU, and what did it represent to you at the time?
Well, how did I get the idea to launch it? I basically Bottom line is, Timbaland had said, "We don't make or sell our boots to drug dealers." And I was a hardworking young man at Red Lobster. And I said, "I'm not a drug dealer. Why would they say that about me?" But it wasn't the first time that I heard something like that. We had already been, as a community of hip hop, was very young at the time. Hip hop was brand new, but I loved it. I knew that it was something that was going to, I didn't know if it was going to dominate the world like it did today, but it was dominating my world. And you insulted me. I was going out of my way to buy those type of companies. So I came up with a brand, FUBU, Fourth Bias. Who's ever going to love and support and value? Now, people think that, number one, that this was this visionary idea. No, I was downstairs in my basement with my buddy and drinking some 40 dogs. I was like, "What are you going to name it? Man, we should name it BUFU. Well, buy us for us." All right. And then we did name it BUFU at first. And then we went outside with a couple of BUFU shirts on. And we found out at that time, BUFU meant something totally different. So we go back and we change it to FUBU. Fourth Bias. Now, a lot of people would think that we had made this off of Fourth Bias. What was Fourth Bias? It was Black people. And it was only for Black people by Black people. Well, then I would be guilty of being a bigot, just like Timbaland was in a sense, if I did that. But, you know, the story is that when my father left when I was 10 years old, I was fortunate enough for my mother to date another man who I call my stepfather, who happens to be of the Jewish faith. He always told me, "Damon, never become the thing you're fighting against, and you better be pro-Black, but never anti anything else." So it was always about a color, because I was dressing MC Search and the BC Boys just as fast as I was dressing LL Cool J and Run DMC. And I was it generated off of an African-American culture of young men between the ages of around 12 years old to 30 years old who came out of the Bronx, who were talking about the trials and the tribulations of the streets? Yes, but it was a cultural thing to share with everybody. And when I did actually take out my first ad, my mail order ad in Rap Pages, the first areas that bought the product were the kids in Japan who were wearing, not as blackface, they were tanning their skins and wearing New York Yankee hats and Knick jerseys and breakdancing because they were trying to emulate the African-Americans on the streets of New York. Or it was the skateboarding white kids in Seattle, Washington that were trying to rebel within the system, that were wearing Nirvana shirts and various other things that are saying, "F you, we are down, who is rebellious no matter what color you are." So that's how I came up with FUBU.
I love it. And every good business has a mission beyond just what they sell. And it sounds like your company represented much more than just the clothes. It represented an identity, which is really cool. So I learned that you actually did this as a side hustle. You worked full-time at Red Lobster for 3 years while you were building FUBU as a side hustle. I also grew my company as a side hustle. I grew it to $5 million in our first year. And at first, it was just a side hustle, and I was working at Disney. So I agree with that type of approach when starting a business. And I'd love to understand from you why you decided to start your business as a side hustle.
So I'm fortunate enough to live in Hollis, Queens, or come up from Hollis, Queens. And I have no idea what's in the water from Hollis, Queens. But who came out of Hollis, Queens is, I'm not even going to talk about James Brown and everybody else who lived in Hollis, Queens. Run DMC, LL Cool J, some of the Fat Boys, Salt-N-Pepa, Tribe Called Quest, Onyx, Lost Boys, 50 Cent, Ja Rule, Intro, Aaron Hall from Guy, Young MC, you know, a lot of people, right, in this square 5 miles. And I was fortunate enough to see them ride by and stuff like that and all these beautiful cars and things of that nature. So here's why I created FUBU, because I couldn't rap, sing, or dance, and I need to get my ass on a video set. And every time me and all the other kids get on the video set, everybody get kicked off of the video set. And I'll be like this, "Hold on, I'm dressing the artist." Now, I wasn't dressing the artist. They're like, "What are you doing?" "I'm dressing the artist." So I got to stay on the video set. Now I'm on the video set and I get to eat for free because of the craft services. I get to watch Run DMC and LL Cool J. I remember watching Biggie Smalls on that video set because I grew up with three other kids. One was called named Irv Gotti, the other was named Hype Williams. And the other kid was a big drug deal that Hype wrote the movie Belly about. Just came home after 30 years. But everybody get kicked on the video set, but I didn't because I got the shirt. And now I'm able to eat the craft services, try to talk to all the video vixens who really would never talk to me, and then look at all these amazing artists creating these videos. So it wasn't a business. It was my ability, like anybody who is buying something or having something, to belong to a community. And it was something that I would have paid to do. You think that when I was growing up, you know how much I would have paid to be on set to see LL Cool J do Hey Lover with Boyz II Men right there in the middle of the hood? So I was still working at Red Lobster, but then all of a sudden I started to see that there was a way to get paid and more people were resonating with what I was doing. This new idea of founders need to start this and raise a bunch of capital is a bunch of bullshit. That's not the way you stay in business, because if I would have just raised capital, first of all, nobody would have invested in me. But if I did, then the kind of money that I would have had to do in the first year to keep FUBU alive, I would have never done it. But I was able to work at Red Lobster and sacrifice having a life. But I was able to do that for 5 years. And Red Lobster was about 10% of my time. FUBU was 10% of my time. Then it became, and Red Lobster was 90% of my time. And then slowly 20, 80, 30, 70. And I was able to close FUBU down 3 times from 89 to 92. But then I'd be globally recognized doing $350 million in by 97 because I kept my day job.
I love that. It's almost like you didn't really have this grand vision for FUBU as a billion-dollar company. You just kept putting one foot in front of the other and doing what you felt passionate about and where you wanted to get involved. You just wanted to be involved in the community.
For the people to understand right now about FUBU, during the time of FUBU, there was no internet. There was no cell phones. And there was only Carl Kanai and Cross Colors who had happened prior to us. If I sold you a shirt on the street, there was no way for me to sell you another one. I would have to find you. There was no way for me to sell you another one. If I took a picture and put out an ad, I would take a picture today. By the time the ad came out, it would be 6 months from now that somebody would see it. And then the stores, if I sold it to a store today, I couldn't sell it online. I would be selling something to a store that wouldn't make it to the store for 1 year. It was a very slow period of time in building this communication and things of that nature. It was a very hard time to do it, but I knew that I would wake up before everybody and go to sleep after everybody. There's 4 of us on the FUBU hang tag. When I first went to the department stores, they said, we can't have your clothes here or you got to take the hang tag off. I said, why? I said, there's 4 African-Americans on a hang tag. You look like a gang. We don't want people coming in here and having shootouts and shoplifting. You have shootouts in your store because you have a size 32 and I want to buy the size 32 and I'm arguing with you. What kind of shit are we talking about? So it wasn't the way it is today. And I couldn't reach the customers directly because there was no internet. So this was a very challenging time in comparison today. And by the way, the hip hop community at that time was a very homophobic community. So when I was hanging out with the artists a lot of times and their crews and, you know, my boys were like, yeah, I'm going to go back and sell drugs. I'm like, I don't sell drugs, man. I can't do that. And I'm like, I mean, you got to see this pattern of strawberries. I got a pattern of a strawberry shirt. I'm going to go home and make strawberry shirts and strawberry looking hats. It's going to match my sneakers. They were like, huh? It wasn't a very welcoming time. There were no known male designers at the time, really. But it was a great time. It was not easy. And thank God it wasn't.
Yeah. And so I know that you had pretty limited resources and you were a really scrappy entrepreneur. You described yourself as scrappy in an interview that I read. So I'd love to understand, what are some of the guerrilla marketing things that you did as a scrappy entrepreneur?
You got to have common sense. And a lot of people try to overanalyze things. And everybody thinks, well, if analytics, you got to analyze things because analytics show everything. If you scrape the right data from analytics, it is. You know, you call up BlackBerry or Blockbuster and Kodak, see how that analytics is working for them. They're no longer around. Now, I was scrappy. So I had money for 50 shirts one time to buy. Now I have an idea here. I'm going to buy 50 shirts. Now, I want to give them away to a couple of music artists and their friends, but if I give them away to all the cool kids, they're going to wear it one time and get rid of it because they don't want to be seen twice in it. But wait a minute, all the guys that wear 4X and 5X and 6X, the big guys in the neighborhood, well, they have limited choices. They can either go to Rochester Big and Tall and get a big old white shirt, big old black shirt, or got to pay a lot of money to get something custom made. I'm going to make those FUBU shirts for them and I'm going to name them FUBU and I'm going to say on the back, official security. Oh, FUBU, right? FUBU Nation or something like that. I give out these shirts to 50 guys. Well, those 50 guys didn't wear it one time. This is the only stylish shirt they had. They wore it 10 times a month. And by the way, you know where these guys were? They were in front of the red ropes at clubs. They were the bodyguards for those music artists. They were the big joyful guys in the neighborhood. They were huge billboards. So now all of a sudden the music artists are saying to them, hey man, I like that FUBU stuff. Why don't you, tell that guy to give me some FUBU? You know what they said? No, man, because you know what you're going to do? He doesn't have a lot of money. You're going to wear it one time, throw it away, and then he ain't going to give me nothing. You better wear it, and you better wear it in the next video. That's guerrilla marketing, right? But, you know, but what else did I do? Well, you know, I saw these security gates, these storm gates that are pulled down right now in front of the stores, right? They graffiti on them. I look at them, and I look at the bus stop. I go, wait a minute, how much people pay right there to put that, whatever, that poster in the bus stop? That's twice as big. I go to them, hey, can I clean up your gates? I'll take that profanity off. Can I put a local company on their name, us kids? And people are going to know that you support a local company. We're going to come support you. I don't care. I spray paint 300 gates from New York to New Jersey. Authorized food dealer. I don't care that you were selling Chinese food. You're an authorized food dealer. What else would I do? Well, I finally started making money. Well, you think because you made money that all of a sudden there's no problem. Well, all of a sudden, you know what happened? MTV is 30 seconds. For 30 seconds, it's like, I don't know, $10,000 for 30 seconds because to run a commercial. But BET is like $500. Why? Well, more people, according to the Nielsen ratings, watching MTV. I'm from the hood. Ain't nobody was paying for that cable in the hood. And by the way, in the projects, it ain't one person in the house, it's 19 in the house. And because there's not a lot of stations out there that show stuff for African-Americans, they're not watching 15 stations, they're watching one. I own the entire damn network for, the same money would have been for MTV because I just had common sense. You just have to have common sense sometimes.
Let's hold that thought and take a quick break with our sponsors. You hear that sound? You should know that sound by now, Young and Profiters, but in case you don't, that's the sound of another sale on Shopify and the moment another business dream becomes a reality. Shopify is a commerce platform revolutionizing millions of businesses worldwide. Whether you're selling edgy t-shirts or an educational course, Shopify simplifies selling online and in person so you can focus on successfully growing your business. Shopify covers every single sales channel, from in-person POS systems to an all-in-one e-commerce platform. It even lets you sell across social media marketplaces like TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram. Shopify is packed with industry-leading tools ready to ignite your growth, and they give you complete control over your business and your brand without having to learn any new skills in design or code. And thanks to 24/7 help and an extensive business course library, Shopify is there to support your success every step of the way. So I started my Shopify store 3 months ago, and I've already made over $120,000. In fact, this month alone, we are projecting that we're going to break $100,000 with my new LinkedIn masterclass, and the backend is completely powered by Shopify since day one. With Shopify, I was able to completely focus on the growth of my course. I made sure that I had time to spend on my course content, my student experience, and the promotion of the course itself. I didn't have to worry about the back end. I didn't have to worry about how I was going to collect payments, how I was going to set up a chat system, how I was going to manage analytics and data, because Shopify did all of that for me. The platform is super easy to use. It's totally plug and play, and it just took a few days to set up our store, and boom, we are ready to start selling. Logging onto Shopify is one of the highlights of my day. I probably log on to Shopify 50 times a day. I love going into their amazing analytics. It is so much fun. I'm able to see every single person in the world, where they are on the site, what part of the buying process they're in. I can literally see that if I go on LinkedIn Live and do a LinkedIn masterclass teaser, that 20 people logged on and there's 8 people checking out. And it's such a rush, like what a dopamine rush every time. What's incredible to me about Shopify is no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify is there to empower you with the confidence and control to revolutionize your business and take your business to the next level. Now it's your turn to get serious about selling and try Shopify today. This is Possibility powered by Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/profiting. That's all lowercase. Make sure you type it in all lowercase. That's shopify.com/profiting to take your business to the next level today. Again, go to shopify.com/profiting, all lowercase, and sign up for a $1 per month trial period. shopify.com/profiting. Yeah, I love that. That reminds me of a quote that one of your early mentors told you, Jay Abraham, who also came on the show in the past. And he told you, everything in the world is a source of something that you can find and make work for you. I love this quote, and I'd love to understand how you used that advice in your early career.
Oh, 100%. I mean, you know, every transaction ever in the world, somebody makes a profit, even when somebody's losing, going bankrupt, or when somebody's throwing out garbage. There is always something that there is another person that have a need. And we all know the red paperclip story. It is just how do you target it and package it to those that need the need or have the need for it. I've made it work in multiple type of ways. Obviously, FUBU was, paying attention to kids that were being neglected. I'll give you an example. The first time I got $50,000 in orders, well, you know, they didn't want to give me $50,000 because they knew that if they gave me a young starving kid, they gave me $50,000, I was going to buy a brand new Hyundai with rims and I was going to keep them clean. I didn't do that. And everything is something. So normally somebody would have went to the banks and whatever and said, got turned down by it. Well, I also didn't have a company where you can invest the money into it because I didn't have a company. Well, I go to somebody else and I realize what the something was. A guy who was screen printing shirts for me was screen printing shirts for, let's say, $6.25. So I'm thinking, what does this guy need? Well, number one, he wants to screen print the shirts, but I don't have the money to give it to him. But he also wants to extend his business. And if he gave me a shot, it doesn't mean anything. I'm one kid. He doesn't know if I'm going to be anybody. Why don't I go and have him sign a contract with me that I will let the store buy directly from him and give him the $50,000. But here's what I'm going to do. Instead of him charging me $6.25 for the shirt, I'm going to have him charge me $7 for the shirt. So he's going to make more. But now I'm going to connect him with the store and they're going to buy more goods from him in different ways. I was able to do that. He made more on the goods. The store was sure that they were going to get the goods. I gave up zero of my company and I got a finance. So everything is something in a different way. You don't take something you have and say, I just don't have nothing, because there's somebody who wants to barter and trade for it. Abraham is the master of trading. And that's why a lot of people get very literal in the fact that we need money to make money. But the best way that Jay Abraham said it is OPM is other people's mind power, manpower, manufacturing, marketing, mentors, and sometimes, like Timberland, other people's mistakes. There's always ways to make profit. You don't have to be so literal that it is a dollar.
That is such good advice. I want to talk about your mom, and then we're going to move on to financial literacy and talk about Shark Tank. So your mom was a huge help to you, especially when you were first starting out with FUBA. I learned that at one point you had $300,000 in orders, you needed a bank loan, you were rejected by 27 banks, and then your mom ended up taking a $100,000 loan out on the house to support you, which you, of course, obviously probably paid her back a million times over for. Let's talk about your mom. What was her influence on like you growing up? And do you feel like you would have had such a successful business without the support of your mother?
I wouldn't have had a successful business without the support of my mother, because first of all, if she wasn't around, I wouldn't be alive. So she gave me birth. But to talk about the business, no. Because first of all, way before the business, we will get into Little Damon, Learn to Earn, my mother gave me the mentality to understand how to hustle and to always be working, creating ways to think about the value for the customer and always having common sense. So she was a great, great entrepreneur and is still a great entrepreneurial thinking person. And most, you know, when people talk about being an entrepreneur, I always say the number one entrepreneur is in every day is a mother. Nothing against dads, but when a woman risks her life to bring a life into this world, no book is going to show her step by step on what to do with this life. She's going to have to figure it out, pivot, bob, weave. And so then my mother was very creative. And so, yes, she was huge in regards to me and my business, and then getting to the part of funding my business. So, I mean, there's a story of mom took out a $100,000 loan on my house. First of all, she wouldn't have taken it out just to take it out. This was after 6 or 7 years of her seeing me do food. I had $300,000 in orders. Then she goes, all right, I see you working on this. You have $300,000 in orders. I'm going to take this loan out for she took out all she could in the house. Now, I have no idea how. She got $100,000 because the house was worth $75,000. Till today, I haven't asked her what she did for the rest of the money. But she got $100,000. She goes, this is all I have. But Damon, you can't go. I don't want you to think that somebody else is going to be able to manufacture this for you. This 100. Remember, Alibaba's not out. The internet doesn't exist. I don't know who to check out. She said, you can't give our money to people that you don't know and just trust them. You're going to have to learn to sew this stuff yourself and create. So I create a factory in the middle of my house. But the real story is, at the end of the day, that right before I got that deal, I was 3 months late on the mortgage, and I only delivered 20% of the clothes, and I was about to be bankrupt and homeless, lose my mother's house, and also lose my business because I didn't have any financial intelligence. And it wasn't that I spent money on lavish things, but as any operator would know today, that I was paying for raw goods 90 days ahead of time to get the goods in. I'm paying for machines, I'm paying for a staff, I'm paying to ship. Again, the internet doesn't exist. I don't know about factoring. You didn't get, pre-orders. There was none of that crap out there. There was the store would give you the money in 30 and 60, 90 days. I was flush out of the cash because it wasn't where we are today. So as much as mom helped me and as great as she is, my lack of financial intelligence, I was about to lose everything that she ever worked for.
But then you ended up becoming an international global brand and doing really well.
Only, by the way, because of mom. Because you know what she did? She came home. She says, you ran out of all the money. I have one last idea. I says, what? She says, I need $2,000. I go back to Red Lobster and I sling as many biscuits as I can. And after 1 month, I come home and give her $2,000. I says, what is this bright idea you have, Ma? She took the money and put it in her pocketbook and said, I'm going to take an ad in the newspaper. I said, the newspaper? I said, that's got to be the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life. And you know what happened? She took an ad in the newspaper. I said, Ma, I forbid you to do it. So she definitely did it. And the ads read, $1 million in orders need financing. 33 people called that ad. 30 of them were loan sharks, but three of them were real. Because if you look on Shark Tank, what did she basically do? She put out into the world, we have proof of concept. We just need funding. And that's what happened.
I love that. Okay, this is a perfect timing to get into your Shark Tank journey and understand how you ended up getting on Shark Tank, because I learned that you actually initially rejected the offer twice. So tell us that story. How did you end up on Shark Tank?
I go back to my desk at the time. You know how that was back then. Well, I don't know how many people know, but we had hard lines. We had phones at the time, cell phones at the time. But my normal, you know, recording had 50 people on there. You know, I checked all the recordings. 48 of them were, I want to borrow this, or I want to sell you some whatever stocks or bonds, or I want to open a new store. But two of them were real, and one was a guy named Mark Burnett's office. Mark Burnett, the famous producer. And he said, hey, I want to put you on a show called Shark Tank. And I was like, all right, well, great. I love it. You know, he's like, you're going to have to spend your own money. And I was like, click. These goddamn pimps in Hollywood. I heard the black people didn't get paid. But that's one thing. But damn, now we have to pay. And then it was 07. A lot of people weren't buying more clothes when they couldn't pay their rent. And I had 10 clothing brands and 8 of them were dead. So I wanted to diversify my portfolio and get pitched other things like electronics or whatever the case is to take up more real estate in the stores. And so then I said, okay, I'm going to do the show. They said, you can't do any other show but ours. I said, okay, but I have three friends that are opening a store in California and I'm going to be on a new cable show three separate times, 3 minutes apiece, 9 minutes total. Can't do any other show but ours. Well, then I said, all right, well, I have to pass respectfully. Thank you. I'm a man of my word. I'm not a reality star, actor, actress. That's not what I do. And then I get a call a couple of days later from a book agent, not even my agent, said, I heard you gave up a show on ABC with Mark Burnett for three girls named the Kardashians that nobody will ever hear of. And he said, you could be on ABC. You could be the new Black Fonzie. I said, no, can't do it. I get a call from the producer of the Kardashians, I think 2 days later. And she says, you know, I don't think you really fit the model. We don't want you in the show no more. You're fired. Goodbye. And then I get a call from Mark Burnett 1 hour after that. And he goes, so I heard you're available. So Khloe Kardashian found out that I was going to turn down the show because I was representing the girls. And she said that the world needs to know who I am. And she would never get in my way. That's why Khloe fired me.
What a good story. I mean, having the Kardashians involved and all that. And it was totally fate. So I'm going to share a little story about how Shark Tank has impacted my life. And then we're going to get into your new children's book. So Damon, I actually, my family was one of the first families impacted by COVID in March 2020. And I remember going to my parents' house, my mom, my dad, my uncle, my brother all had COVID. I ended up being quarantined at my parents' house for 3 months because I got sick. None of my friends wanted to hang out with me. I was working from home from Disney. And my dad ended up getting so sick, he was in the hospital and basically was dying for 3 months. And I remember being so depressed. I was binge watching Shark Tank every single night. Sorry, I'm going to like cry. And you guys got me through it because that was me and my dad's favorite show. And that's when I decided to take this podcast and really turn it up a notch. I started my own company called Yap Media. It's a social media agency. The company blew up. My first client paid us $800 a month. My second client was $30,000 a month. And then I kept getting one huge client after the next. And I have to say that Shark Tank was one of the main reasons why I was inspired to become an entrepreneur. It taught me so much. I literally only watched that show for 3 or 4 years and didn't allow myself to watch any other TV. And you've just been a huge inspiration. So thank you.
Wow. I can hear how passionate you are about it, you know. We went on the show initially thinking it was going to be great opportunities to get great deals, and the show became something bigger and better. Mark Cuban, then being the tech guy he is, when everybody else the show was going to be canceled the first 3 years. It wasn't doing well, like it hasn't done in many markets. But the data showed that it would jump in 3-4 years because it's very hard to explain that show. Who wins? Are they in? Is it on Discovery Channel during Shark Week? Do they get dumped into some shark? You know, sharks are. When do they get the money? And Mark Cuban found out that it was one of the top shows watched kids and parents together, and kids 5 to 15, and the ones taught in school. And all these so-called famous celebrity entrepreneurs at the time, many of them have been on our show after that, they wouldn't go onto the show because they didn't know who a Damon, a Barbara, a Kevin, and whatever it was, because they were like, they're not famous. But Mark Cuban said that this is helping American families bond and be together and creating, you know, new sharks. I'm going to go on the show. So Mark goes on the show, and now he can walk onto Jimmy Kimmel. He can walk onto the late night show because he's Mark Cuban. We couldn't walk on there. And because of him, season 3, the show's out of here. And what it is an institution. It is one of the only shows on TV that families like a daughter and a father could watch. It's the only show on TV where you cannot know what it is to be an entrepreneur, but then, you know, watch it for 2 years straight and walk into the room and know the questions that a millionaire and billionaire are going to ask you. And that's why it's a huge honor to be on the show and to have that experience that you have shared with me.
Yeah, I really thank you for all your work on that show. So let's talk about financial literacy. What did being on Shark Tank teach you about financial literacy in America, or the lack of it?
It taught me that we are not taught financial literacy in America. It taught me that most of the people that come on the show, well, not most, but a lot in the earlier days, they were only in those situations because they did not have financial literacy or financial intelligence. And there was nothing wrong with them and nothing wrong with that because we weren't taught it. As I go through the data of 65%, a lot of winners and athletes are bankrupt 3 years after leaving the league or winning the lotto because they weren't taught that. It's not that, you know, everybody wants to call, that's why people call athletes big, dumb athletes. No, they're not. They are the most prime beings in understanding of running plays and understanding how to be the ultimate person. That, remember, there's only 3,000 professional athletes all combined in the United States. You know how rare that is? But it doesn't mean that they understand finance. I know, you know who does not understand often finance? Doctors. They don't. They know how to cut you open and save your life, and that's way more important. But we're not taught that, and that's why we are in the jam we're in. We are a country of renters now because the American dream is moving away from us. The American dream of buying a house at a certain price and it growing in equity, and then you raising your family, and then the house is worth a lot of money. You take that equity out of it. You then go and move to a very small place and reduce your imprint, and you live off of that for the rest of your life. That American dream is gone. And it's going away because we don't have financial intelligence. And that's the point, and that's the problem.
So I know, Damon, that you've written multiple best-selling books, and you basically have made it your life's work to pass on your hard-earned business acumen. How come you're focusing on children now?
How come I'm focusing on children now? Why? How? Do you have any children yet?
Not yet, no.
You have nieces and nephews?
Yes.
How old are they?
They are 6 and 8.
6 and 8. My perfect. That's my target market. And the best thing, guess what about those 6 and 8 year olds? They don't have credit cards. But those 6 and those 8 year olds. Oh, by the way, I got to put this on. Sorry. Excuse me.
What does that represent?
What does this represent?
Yes.
When I'm talking to a 6 and 8 year old, do you think they give a shit about my $10,000 Tom Ford suit when I'm sitting on TV?
No.
You got to meet your customer where they're at. And when I put this on, guess what? You gonna do magic? Oh, I'm gonna do some magic, yeah. I'm gonna teach you how to make $1 into $2. I'm gonna teach you how to be successful. I'm gonna teach you how to get out of your mommy and daddy's house whenever you want to. So, all right, let's get into the story here. This is Little Damon Learns to Earn. Let me tell you something. This is the first book in history that I see like its kind because we are not taught financial intelligence in school. And the reason why we're not taught it is not because it is a scam. It's not. Our school system is antiquated. It is teaching our children right now how to go to shop. We needed to learn how to go to shop when we were at war and we needed to understand a trade and a skill. It teaches us how to be good employees. However, if we are not teaching them at first grade, second grade, how a dollar works, what is compounding interest, and not in saying what's compounding interest, we don't tell them that they're supposed to be in school. We're not supposed to be talking about how much are they supposed to get? $6 an hour, $8 an hour? No. When we start talking about if a train leaves a station at 6 and arrives at 9, what's it worth? That's time. And when we break it down in the way of, and if you do this, you either have to leave later so you can have more time to play with your friends or more time to eat candy. Or if you do that, then you start to break down and let them understand how to understand financial intelligence. Because here's the problem. If you don't teach them financial intelligence in any way and how money works, well, then at 16 and 17 years old, the credit card companies are lined up and they all have CFOs. The colleges are lined up and they all have CFOs. They're lined up to give them and issue them $600,000 to $700,000 worth of student debt that they will not pay off until they're into their 50s because they don't have financial intelligence. And what are they going to do? They're going to spend that on an education they're not even sure if they want. The stats and the data is 50% of the kids that are graduating today will retire with a job title that doesn't exist today. If I told you 20 years ago you were going to be an AI expert or a podcaster or a pay-per-click manager or a social media manager or a drone operator, you would have said, what the hell is that? I'm going to go and get this $500,000, $600,000 education that I don't even know if I need.
Yeah.
But now, don't get me wrong. It is not a scam because, by the way, they teach you finance and accounting in college. But you just took the $600,000 loan and now they're going to teach you finance? Well, you might as well just enroll in the Navy. I'm going to teach you how to swim after you're out in the ocean in a war with 20-foot swells. You can't do that.
Yeah.
And that's why this is going to be my legacy and my life's work. This is what I am going to the grave for, because here's why. This is what I call my three-peat. I changed the world in the way that African-Americans, as well as culturally, people thought of African-Americans and the culture of hip-hop, because FUBU is the number one exported hard goods in American history.
Mm.
I would also affect and change the world after 14 years being on a show that showed families that you can do this. If somebody was laying on the couch, they decided and understood what it is to be a shark. And there is going to be kids who are right now watching me on Shark Tank who will grow up and they will change the world and be bigger and better than I ever will be. But this is what I'm going to the grave with, because it's not about a book. This is about teaching our kids financial intelligence. And this is about getting the school system and other people to say there's a whole lot of financial intelligence, financial literacy things out there. And oh my God, Atlanta, you just put this into the school system and it's starting to work better. Detroit, why aren't you doing something similar with other products out there? Houston, why aren't you? Arizona, and I want to make it a thing for people to start to say, this is good. I want Chase to say, why don't we come up with financial intelligence programs that we gift to schools? And then when I die, I want my little girls to say, my daddy started a movement that everybody got behind.
We'll be right back after a quick break from our sponsors. I love that. I hear the passion in your voice on this, and it's really, really moving. So do you feel like kids right now don't have the right role models? Do you feel like kids today are actually worse off than they were 10, 20 years ago in terms of this?
You know, kids today have the right role models. I'm not going to be the old fogey. Why you listen to music? Kids have wrong role models that are showing them that all of a sudden they are just, you know, it's easy to be rich. Kids have other role models that unfortunately have come from really bad areas, and all they're doing is talking about what they know because that's all they have, because they have been marginalized and come from a lot of systemic issues. But kids have other role models who have overthrown governments by not picking up a gun, by picking up something called Twitter. Kids have other role models who are their age, who are like, the generation before us have destroyed this planet. I'm going to take all the plastics out of this ocean. I looked at my little girl one day and I said, what do you want to be when you grow up? She's about 4 years old. She said, what do you want to do? She said, I want to pick up trash. I said, what? I'm paying $60,000 for you to pick up trash? This has nothing to do with the great men and the great women in our cities who bust their ass to pick up trash to make sure that we don't have diseases and rats and roaches. But then I said, why do you want to pick up trash? You know, my little girl said to me with her big, beautiful eyes.
What's that?
Because I want to clean up the world, Daddy. Now, picking up trash to her may be reducing the carbon imprint on this planet. It may be taking plastics out of our waterways that then go into our bloodstream. So there are a lot of role models for kids out there. But the problem is today's generation of children, your nieces and nephews, they don't have any national role models. Why? Because after 5 or 6 years old, they tap out of Peppa Pig, Daniel Tiger, Thomas the Train. When I grew up, I had a national role model. I had Mr. Rogers, Steve Roth, whatever the case is, even what Mr. Cosby was putting out. I had the Muppets. We all went around that. Even my older kids had Steve from Blue's Clues, Dora the Explorer. Now, who do the kids have? They pick up an iPad and there's 1,000 splintered families showing how to play with toys. And they're more excited about unboxing than creating what's in the box. But guess what? I'm the only, and this is sad, I'm the only African-American man on a national television show for 14 years that does not come from music, sports, or politics. And I've been in these kids' room for 14 years. I don't have a superpower. You don't need to think that I was the only one who could dunk a ball. I can sing. If my dumb ass can do it, you can do it.
I love that. So let's talk about what's inside this book, Damon. So I believe that you're teaching kids about entrepreneurship, financial literacy. And basically in your book, little Damon, he wants to buy a music poster. He doesn't have enough money to buy it. And then his mom points out that, hey, you've got talents that you could use to solve problems. And little Damon becomes an entrepreneur. So what are some of the lessons, if my young and profiters go out by this book for their young kids, what are some of the lessons that they're going to learn and their kids are going
to
learn?
Well, first of all, I want them to take their parent hat off, because as you became a parent and an adult, it was a trap. You had to grow up. So first of all, I want you to think like a kid. So first of all, when little Damon opens up this business, guess what happens at first? He fails. Horribly. I love this teacher that is in my teacher group. I got advisors, I got teachers. You know what she tells her kids? She says, Monday is this kind of day, Tuesday is this kind of day. You know what Wednesday is? Wednesday is curveball Wednesday. And then she has Thursday and Friday. Our kids are never taught curveball Wednesday, right? We always think things are going to go well. So Damon's first business fails. He comes back depressed. What I want to do? So what happens? Mom says, you got to find out what are your friends' best skills, because you need friends. See, entrepreneurship is a team sport. You may have, you may be a single owner entrepreneur, but you're working with various other people to get your goods. Da, da, da. Well, then Damon tries and finds a way to get his friends. You can sing, you can dance, you can draw. Let's start to sell these things, because I want you to draw it, but I want you to stand outside and sing. Oh, you're going to get people over to our booth by this. Oh, you're really good at math. And all of them start to profit off of it. And not little Damon starts to win. At the end, when they divvy everything up, because they got to reorder and whatever the case is, everybody gets to profit. And that is another key, because our kids grew up thinking a boss is somebody who tells you to get coffee. A boss is the first of the office, the last to leave, the one who thanks everybody for their success and blames only one person for their failure. And that's the key. But I don't want to read to my little girl any more Princesses and Pony books, because how many times am I going to read to my little girl to wait around for some prince because there's going to be some glass slipper that you're going to drop, or to pull your hair out of some damn tower because a prince is going to come around? I'm trying to teach my little girl how to sell glass slippers. I don't want to teach my little boy, if I had a little boy, that the webs are going to come out his wrist or he's going to fly. No, you know what? If he thinks that the Avengers are great because they all come together to use their superpowers to stop evil, well, all his little friends have superpowers. Why don't you bring your superpowers together to bring joy to your friends and to create something and create fun, things that you love. And if you fail at making money at it, at least you had fun. You're the super friends. You are the Avengers. That's the critical thinking that kids need to know. And that's what little Damon Learns to Earn is about. And I want the parents to take their goddamn parent hat off. When I read Catcher in the Rye as a kid, I read it one time and said, what the hell am I doing? I read it one time. A kid is repetitive. You don't read this book once. You read it once a month to them, because they go out and they go, oh man, they didn't get it the first, second time, but they love the way you told the story. Maybe the third month, they go, wow, my friend knows how to do this. And you know what? After they get tired of it in a year or 2 years, you know what you do? You give it to another family.
I love this mission. I want to help you. I have a lot of successful listeners who listen to the show. How can we help you get the word out?
How many successful? You know what? When is this going to be out?
This is going to be out March 27th.
March 27th. I'll tell you what I'll do. You know what? Here you go. Just help me and spread the word, because we have a great program, a buy one, gift one. Because it's you, they buy a book and go to littledamon.com and they'll enter into something where one person will be picked by your crew that I'll spend a 15-minute one-on-one with them and give them all the advice I can on how to become more successful or do something else. But at the end of the day, It's just about getting the word out. You know what? And double dare everybody else to take on the same journey and come out with other products like this that I will highlight on my platform to give them a voice to hopefully just change this narrative in our country.
And do you see Little Damon moving on to have some sort of I could totally see a TV show or something like that.
Yeah, you know, Little Damon will move on to having more things in more ways, but we're coming up with a system so the children understand what to do with $3, $300, $3,000, $3 million. People don't understand America how it's supposed to work. The first dollar goes to what you have to pay for. The second goes for an investment. And the third goes for what you would like to have, but don't have to have. But what do we do as Americans? Well, we put number three as number one. We'll never get to number two. And number one, we'll get to at the end or we get kicked out. So start to learn that. We have systems that we will be bringing out, but what do you want to do with your kids' thing? Show them the $3. You know what else to do? You know your nieces and nephews? You know what to do with them? Every year, get them. You want to get them a toy, right? Of course, right? Because they're kids, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, when you get them something, buy the boy, he likes trucks. Buy him one share in Caterpillar. But buy him a little Caterpillar truck. Because it's share, he sees in Caterpillar. He's going, what the hell is that? Buy him a Caterpillar truck and take a picture of you with him in the truck at that time, right? And that's for Christmas and for birthday. Well, then I don't know what he likes, but maybe like, I don't know, whatever the toy it is, buy a share in Mattel. I don't know if it's a public company. Before you know it, and every parent can do this. You know, American Girl, I think, is owned by Mattel or something like that. Before you know it, by the time they're 16 years old, that one share would have changed to this amount. They would have been like, well, if you would have put that in the bank, you would have got 3%, 4%. But you put that there, it averaged out to probably about 15, 16, 17%. Here's the picture of me with my auntie with my truck, with this, with that. You got to get them accustomed to these things in the way that they think about it. Remember, a kid, if they see one quarter and two pennies, they think the two pennies is more than the one quarter. But if they see one quarter equate to how many damn gummy bears they can buy against two pennies, oh, now they know the difference. Little things we got to do.
Yeah, I love this, Damon. Thank you so much for your time. I want to be respectful of your time. I'm going to end the show with two last questions. The first one is, what is one actionable thing our young and profiters can do today to become more profitable tomorrow?
It all depends. They have to reinvest in whatever they love, right? But financial intelligence is a thing to be more profitable about. And if you want to have more financial intelligence and you are concerned about the way to do it, well, how can I meet you exactly where you are? Not me, but the same way that you have all those accounts on Instagram where you know all the places to go for dinner, all the bags you want to shop for, or all the places to travel, put on 30 accounts that have something to do with financial intelligence, but do not buy anything. And I'm telling you now, after a year or 2 years of scrolling through there, you will have a way better understanding. The same way that you watch Shark Tank to become who you are, I almost went bankrupt 3 times, 2 times when I was poor and 1 time when I had $10 million. I did the same thing and I watched a show called Mad Money by Jim Cramer every single day for 2 years. And guess what happened? After that, nobody could mess with me when it came to financial intelligence.
I love that. You always got to level up, young and profiters. And Damon, what is your secret to profiting in life?
What is my secret to profiting in life? It is 3 tentpoles to how you profit in life and anybody to be successful. Number one, know your why. Number two, set goals to accomplish that why. And number three, you got to keep learning and do your homework. Here's the only problem. Many of us don't want to admit what our why is, and many of our whys are being done for somebody else, what society thinks. So here's the bigger problem. If you are saying you have the wrong why, well, then what kind of goals are you going to set? Because you're setting the wrong goals. And if you have the wrong goals, well, then the education you have to enforce the wrong goals is going to be the wrong stuff. You are the only one that has the blueprint to yourself. But you want to be famous? Well, then set some goals to be famous. I got nothing against that. You know, one of my favorite rappers was Old Dirty Bastard, and he set some goals that he was going to be an old dirty bastard. And he did his homework on how to be an old dirty bastard. God bless his soul, but he was an old dirty bastard. That's it. I mean, he was the only one who knew what he wanted to do. The problem is too many people lying to themselves about their why. Don't do it for your mother, your father. Don't do it because you think it looks cool. You're the only one who's got to sleep with yourself at night.
I love that. Great advice, Damon. Thank you so much for coming on the show, guys. Little Damon Learns to Earn is on the shelves now. If you have any kids, make sure you cop that book right away. Damon, it was honestly a dream come true to have you on the show. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. I love what you do. I love the fact that we had to a little bit of connection and so emotional about what you do because it's clear you're passionate. And I appreciate you bringing me on the show and giving me this opportunity. Thank you to all the entrepreneurs out there. And, you know, if you think I look stupid in the hat, I want you to know that you're playing yourself because you loved Willy Wonka. You love Clint Eastwood. You love Harry Houdini. You love Frosty the Snowman. Stop playing yourself. I look really cool in this.
I agree. You look fly, Damon.
And your kids think I look cool. So if I'm going to be attractive to your kids because it's hat and teach them financial intelligence, I look anyway. Call me stupid. This is for our kids.
I love it. Thanks so much, Damon.
You got it. Thank you.
Man, young and profiters, what a dream come true it was to interview Damon John. I teared up in the middle of this interview thinking about how much his work on Shark Tank impacted me. Shark Tank was actually the only show that I allowed myself to watch for 4 entire years. When I was building Yap as a podcast, I had a full-time job and I wanted it to be a huge show. And that means I needed to invest a lot of time in it. I had to remove all my unproductive time, which included things like reality TV, mindlessly scrolling on social media, and lots of things that I didn't really need to do that was sucking up my time. And my only bit of edutainment was Shark Tank, thanks to Damon John. And I love what Damon is focused on. He's teaching financial literacy to today's youth, and that is such an important job. And who better than Damon John? He's one of the most respected entrepreneurs in the world. He's somebody that kids recognize from TV. And I'm so proud of everything Damon accomplished in his life. From working at Red Lobster to selling hats in Queens to taking FUBU to a $6 billion company to rocking primetime national TV, Damon is truly the epitome of the American dream. And you know, it's kind of scary to meet your idols in real life. It's funny to think that for so many years, I would watch Damon on TV with my dad in the living room. And then fast forward to 2023, he's sitting directly across from me on the screen, chatting directly to me. He knows my name. He knows my podcast. And it's just crazy. Like, what a surreal moment. And luckily for me, Damon was an absolute sweetheart. Sometimes these huge celebrities come on the show and they're kind of standoffish and they're just not in a good mood and they have no idea who I am and they could be a little rude. But Damon was nothing like that. He was a sweetheart. And he even got a little silly towards the end after he warmed up a bit. And it goes without saying that our world and our youth is a little better with Damon John in it. And if you have kids, make sure you go get Damon's new children's book. If you want to enter a chance to win 15 minutes of Damon John's time, go to littledamon.com, purchase your bundle, and then enter code YAP at checkout. Again, go to littledamon.com, purchase your bundle, and enter code YAP at checkout to enter the contest. Thanks for listening to Young and Profiting Podcast. If you listened, learned, and profited, share this episode with your friends and family. And take a minute to drop a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you like watching your podcast videos, check us out on YouTube. And I highly recommend that you check out this specific episode on YouTube because there's some really funny parts at the end of it. And you can also find me on Instagram at YapWithHala or LinkedIn by searching my name. It's Hala Taha. Big shout out to my amazing, talented Yap production team. Shout out to my executive producer, Jason Ames. Shout out to Critty, my VP of Ad Ops, Amelia, Greta, Paul, the whole team. Really appreciate everything you guys do. This is your host, Hala Taha, signing off.
Hope you enjoyed this episode. I'm Darius Mershazadeh, host of The Greatness Machine and part of Yap Media Network, the number one business and self-improvement podcast network. So what's The Greatness Machine? The Greatness Machine, we are a badass podcast and we're about two things. We're about people who are living their passions and those who are creating greatness in the world and doing so despite the odds, because we know that creating greatness is not necessarily an easy road. What do I do in all my interviews and episodes? We're going to be diving into origin stories. You know, what makes people tick and why they did what they did to get where they're going. I interview some of the greatest minds in the world, turning their wisdom and their experience into learning and advice that you can use in your life so that you can level up and you can create some massive greatness in your life. You're also going to get to hear solo episodes. This is like my greatest life learnings, the things I wish someone had taught me. Join me as I go deep with guests like Gabby Reese, Amanda Knox, former FBI negotiator Chris Voss, Stanford behavioral psychologist BJ Fogg, and my boy, NHL Hall of Famer and Olympian Chris Pronger, and so many more. You can find The Greatest Machine on listening platforms everywhere, so be sure to check it out. We launch episodes Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Listen now.